Welcome to the SDR Disco Call Vidcast and Podcast, a show designed for brand new sales reps working in the world of tech sales. I'm your host, Neil Buyan, and I'm going to be taking you on a journey on the SDR Disco Call Vidcast and Podcast. Did you know that you can watch this show live with the guests on YouTube? This show is available on YouTube at happyselling.io. Hello, listeners, watchers, and subscribers. Welcome to another chapter in the SDR Disco Call Show. You're probably coming back, or perhaps this is your first time. What is this show all about? It's about getting into the world of tech sales and sales development. And we're here to meet great people that are along our journeys and to understand their stories as to how did they get into this industry, what can they teach us to help share tips and insights to make you guys and girls out there as happy sellers. And I'm your host, Neil Buyan. And with this guest today, they're somebody pretty special because they were voted number one top 50 UK SDR managers by Sales Confidence. And I was really happy to see that they reached out to me asking if they could come on the show. And I was like, hell yeah, we can get you on. So without further ado, guest, could you please introduce yourself? Who are you? Where are you from? And what do you do?
Hi, yes, I'm Emily. I am the Inside Sales Director at Insider. I am working and living near London at the moment. I'm from Manchester, which you might be able to tell from the accent. And yeah, I've been in SDR leadership now for 7 years. So really been sort of helping to develop and grow lots of different SDR teams at this stage.
Well, Miss Parker, thank you very much for coming on the show and welcome to the SDR Disco Call podcast. And inside, a question that I love to ask all of our guests, Emily, outside of sales, what's your kind of passions, hobbies and interests, and what do you get up to?
Yeah, that's a really good question, Neil. At the moment, I've got a one-year-old, so she's basically my passion right now. But before mum life, I was a very keen swimmer, competitive swimmer when I was younger, joined, master's teams as well, so really into my swimming, not really a land sports kind of person. You wouldn't catch me on a run. But right now it's like baby and mum life.
Baby and mum. 101. Love that. So congratulations. And I think that is a topic that I would love to talk about, parenthood as well, maybe coming into sales and leadership as well, because it's something that I went through many years back. But again, thank you so much for coming on the show. And a gentle reminder for all of our listeners, if you're listening to this in your local podcast platform, please make sure that you give us a rating and share this episode with anybody that you think could find value from it. And equally, if you're watching this on our YouTube channel, make sure that you like, comment, and subscribe down below. And if you have any questions for our guests, feel free to put them in the comments and Emily will be happy to answer them. So normally at this point, what we like to do on the show is visit our guests' LinkedIn profile to check them out and see who are they. And as a reminder, we'll always put the LinkedIn profiles within the show notes. So if anything you hear today about Emily or what we're discussing and you want to pick her brains, feel free to connect. And also to let you know that Emily is hiring, so feel free to reach out. And she's put the link in her profile there. I love it. So Emily, you're somebody that's doing, I've seen a lot of content. You've done some great stuff with Sales Confidence as well. And looking at your career and your experience, you've had quite a few different leadership roles. At Infinity, at Narva, Zencargo, and obviously working at Insider. But in your own words, Emily, could you tell us, how did you get into sales? How did you end up in leadership? And also, why is it cool to be an SDR manager?
Yeah, most people will end up saying, I fell into sales, and I am definitely within that category as well. I was at university, and a couple of guys who I lived with were doing an assessment center with Pareto. And said, come along to the assessment center. It will be good interviewing practice. So that was the absolute only reason I went. I didn't think a role in sales was going to be for me. And anyway, I went along, loved the day, obviously did well in the assessment center and got put forward to some roles through them. And that kind of sparked my interest in an area that I hadn't even considered before, to be honest with you. Then I did a university placement that involved selling, that kind of basically from there I've been in the world of SDR.
So quick question on that. I'm very familiar with Pareto Law and with the assessment days. And it's a topic that I used to get a bit grumbled about way back in the day. But I know I've actually met quite a lot of people that have gone through that process, etc. And I'm not sure if it still happens as much nowadays. I'm not too sure.
I think they do it online now.
But yeah, exactly. And I was wondering, what was that experience like? So for somebody that hadn't worked in that industry role, but somebody kind of like said to you, here's some great experience to go do it. Mm. How did you prepare for it? What was it like going through that assessment? And what was life like? What's the process after those sort of things?
Yeah, it's very intense. At the time, we went and there was about 40 or 45 of us in one room. Mm. And then, you know, you've got to stand up in front of everybody and say a fun fact. And then you go into breakout rooms and everyone's fighting to get a word in. And
yeah.
And naturally, you've got a lot of people in one space who are loud and who do want to kind of be extroverted and show themselves.
Mm.
So it can become, you know, the level of volume just gets higher and higher and higher in the room. And
yeah.
You've got to try and maintain your cool. But now, looking back on it in hindsight, knowing what people are looking for, what the assessors are looking for in those kind of environments, it's not always the loudest person.
Mm.
So I don't know if I prepared for it. I don't know if I knew what was going on. Maybe I just had some kind of natural success in there.
Yeah.
Partially because I wasn't so desperate to have a role in sales. Maybe I didn't care enough to over try, if that makes sense. And actually, it's funny because all the jobs in my life where I've gone up for a role and I've really, 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 really wanted the role and cared so much, I've struggled in the interview.
Yeah.
And the jobs where I'm like, actually, I am not 100% sure about this company, I'm going to interview them.
Ooh, I've done, pick on that.
Yeah, I've seemed to have done better in those interviews. So maybe that's a trick out there.
I love that. So there's quite actually a lot that I'd love to pick apart in that, if that's all right, Emily. Like hearing, you know, going into a room full of 40 people and, you know, there's people that are louder, there's extroverted personalities and you're trying to, in essence, impress the assessors, etc. It kind of makes me think it sounds like The Apprentice with Alan Sugar,
yeah.
That sort of environment. And I can think way back in my days of when I first met salespeople, they were very extroverted, confident, you know, individuals. And I found it very intimidating. And I just used to look at them and think, like, I'm not that yet,
mm-hmm.
right? And there's probably people that are going through interview processes which may fear, because perhaps they're more introverted or they're not as loud or they're perhaps an analytical thinker and want to review things before responding to it. What kind of advice would you give to perhaps the person who may fear that confidence element, that they don't have that charisma or riz yet for the assessors?
Yeah, that's a good thing to think about. And there is a book, and I can't remember who wrote the book, but it's called The Loudest Duck, which kind of goes into, you know, why maybe you don't need to be the loudest person in the room. So maybe we'll link that in the show notes.
Yeah, yeah.
But I do think that more and more now, the personality style of somebody in sales and definitely in SDR isn't that typical person that you imagine.
Yeah.
There's so much research, thought, strategy into how you actually prospect and sell to people these days, especially if you're in SaaS and especially if you're in enterprise space, that a combination of different personality types actually is what makes a successful team, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So if you're not that, you know, that complete extrovert, one person who's going to always be the loudest in the room and bring the riz, it's not, you know, you might excel in areas that person struggles in terms of, you know, taking a step back, taking it slow, thinking about who you're going to reach out to, mapping the accounts and kind of all that preparation work that will sort of also bring a lot of value. And also, you don't have to be a natural extrovert, I guess, to learn the skill set of having conversations.
Yeah.
Once you've practiced, it becomes a bit of a formula, which I think some people do like the idea of as well.
And I think, you know, that's great advice, because I think you become confident over time. The more you do it, the more you have those conversations, the more you meet those type of people. I'll give you like a real life example. This week, I went to Holborn, where I went to a techie event full of developers, and that's just not my normal like crowd, right? I normally go to sales events, and I felt so intimidated within that room But there was a little niggling thing in myself, like a little like a monologue going on in my head. He said, no, these are just people, right? So when it came to the networking piece, shook my hand, spoke to one other person. I actually found out he was a salesperson previously in a former life, but he loved the tech so much that he went down the developer route, and we had a great chat and stuff like that. And another interesting piece that you said about, like, you're interviewing them. So recently I've been helping a friend who doesn't work in sales, but he's actually going into the world of marketing.
Right.
And he, as part of his course, he has to go for interviews, job interviews with agencies, right? And I was giving him all the interview prep sort of stuff like that. And he, I kind of said to him, like, you need to kind of interview them to an extent to qualify them if they're a good job for you.
Yeah.
And when he came out of London after the interview, he said, yeah, dude, he said, the first half was they were asking me a bunch of questions and I could see them looking at a questionnaire. And he said, that felt a bit weird. And he said, I actually felt like I was being interrogated more than being interviewed. Yeah. And I was like, but then he said, I did flip it and I started asking them questions. And, you know, by the end of the interview, the person interviewing him said he did really well and more than what other candidates had done prior that day. So, you know, in the world of SDRing and going for jobs or working in tech, what's your take on interviewing them and how do you do that, Emily?
Yeah. Remind me that I'm going to touch on three things here. Number one, I'm going to touch on the first role I had as an SDR, which I'm pretty sure we'll end up coming back to. Yeah. There wasn't really, I'm not trying to be negative about any company or any situation, but there wasn't the structure in place, and that company realized that and made the whole team redundant after not very long, really. And I kicked myself really for taking the job without necessarily, you know, doing my due diligence. And then from that point onwards, then I was really, really nervous about getting into the wrong situation again. So I started to ask loads and loads of questions, and the feedback that I got every time, which brings me on to point number two, is that I showed such a natural curiosity that is a very, very important attribute to have as an SDR.
Yeah.
Because you are spending most of your time trying to find out information, asking questions. And if that is natural to you, you are going to probably perform better in the role. So they're kind of two reasons why I think it's important. One, you want to make sure you get into a company that has their stuff together.
Yeah.
I don't know if we swear on this podcast. But then also you want to show your curiosity and show that you are going to be comfortable asking questions to people who are potentially more senior to you. And then the third one, which now that I've said the third one, I can't remember what my third one was.
It will come back. Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's... Oh, no, I've remembered it. Yeah.
Go for it.
Brilliant. That was quite quick, actually. I had a very refreshing experience when I went through the interview process with Insider, because the first interview that I did was with the person who would be my line manager and his line manager. And they said, this is an interview where you ask all the questions. They did not ask one question. It was just for me to quiz them. Now, I don't know if that is their standard. Kind of, we don't do that in all roles. So if you apply for an SDR job with me, that probably won't happen. But I loved that because, you know, it gave me that opportunity to ask all the questions I wanted and showcase my curiosity. So yeah, that was really cool.
Those are three top tips and tactics. I was being able to roll my tongue on that one. I love that, Emily. And, you know, like asking those company questions, I think to kind of bring it back a little bit. So obviously with a lot of our audience listeners, these are people that are potentially wanting to come into tech sales and they may be going for their first tech sales interview. And to your point, doing your due diligence and making sure that you don't make those wrong choices, because it is your career and it's a big part of your life, right? What kind of due diligence could perhaps an SDR BDR do before they go for that first interview, or, you know, even following from that interview to help them build those questions to ask?
Yeah, well, I think if you kind of look into all of the people who you're going to be interviewing with, that's a first port of call, especially if you're going for an SDR role. So kind of looking at their LinkedIn profile, seeing what their experience is, how long have they been at this company? Maybe even you might be able to find something out about what they got brought into the company to do.
Yeah.
That could be very interesting. But also looking at the company itself and their profile and what do they share and you know, do they go to events? Do they host their own events? Have they kind of got a strong partnerships program that they shout about online? So what we're really looking for is a leader who you can get behind and who you believe is going to support you, but then also a company that has structure in place to a certain extent. You might be the kind of person who wants to join a company that's very early stage and you want to be part of building that structure. But, you know, then you want to quiz them on the call about what their plans are for the structure.
Yeah.
So some of the simple things that you can ask about are what tools are in place. And if they don't have tools in place, what kind of tools would they like to put in place in the future?
Yeah.
And also, you know, the structure of the team. How big is the team? How many SDRs are there to manage a ratio? That can be an interesting one. And just like trying to get the lay of the land, I think, and asking those questions. But also, what's the, you know, what's the strategy of the company? How, you know, what are they actually trying to achieve? Because that can make a very big difference in terms of what's going to be happening in your role. When I was at a company that was going A to B, it was all about how can we grow as quickly as possible? How can we kind of scale up everything that we're doing? Whereas now, in a much later stage company, in a unicorn, it's really about how can we be sustainable and consistent with the way in which we're operating, rather than kind of, you know, the early stage is very much like scrappy, get everybody roll their sleeves up.
I love that. And I think to like extend on it, so it's great, but like doing that due diligence to have like a real interest within that business, understanding their makeup, their strategy and everything, and not just looking at it as a job, right? Because for me, a job is just your 9 to 5, you punch in, you punch out, and then you go home and that's it. But within a business, when you have a real interest, you kind of want to see like, how can you see yourself within that? How can you see yourself helping that company grow and establish themselves as, you know, that next unicorn or company that goes IPO? That was what really excited me when somebody presented the role of joining a company. It's just not joining another NatWest or, you know, big Fortune 500 company. It's this, you know, this business that's disrupting the market. And I think like other tips that I give to SDRs is like, go on Google, you know, type in that company name, click the news tab, see what's been mentioned in articles. And it's similar to prospecting, right? To see what funding they've got. And, you know, what were the words of, you know, the C-level and the board, and what are they looking to do in terms of expansion? How are they different in the market? What are they looking to change? What are they passionate about? And even to my mate who was preparing him for his marketing job interview, I said, dude, go on LinkedIn and go find the people that are already doing the job that you want to apply for and connect with them. But when I mentioned that idea to him, he said, why the hell would I talk to people that don't even know who I am? I said, well, bro, look at it this way. If you could get like 15 minutes of their time to ask them 3 top questions, which is, why did you join this company? What is it like working day to day in this business, right? And what were your biggest mistakes when you joined that company? Because I said, dude, if you get that insight, it does 2 things. One, it gives you an insight into their company and what it's like to work for them and hearing it from the horse's mouth. But secondly, you're now starting to make connection with people before you've even joined that job, if that's the company that you want to go for, right? He was hesitant. He has started doing it. But, you know, there's no harm in that. Because again, to your point earlier on, Emily, where you want to make sure you're making the right choice for your career, it's, you know, you have to do your due diligence. And I think, you know, if you're going to go into SDR land as well, that's kind of what you're going to be doing with your prospects and their company. So kind of get used to it. But obviously the other side of it is, you know, a lot of people that are coming into these roles to be SDRs, and this is something we spoke about before our recording today. So I'm, you know, coaching 30 to 40 SDRs a week. And a lot of them are brand new to coming into this role. And obviously a question I ask as a coach is, aspirationally, career wise, which way do you want to go? And a mass majority will say they want to become an account executive. But every now and then I get somebody who says they want to go into leadership, right? They want to go into management, and it brings a smile to my face because obviously, you know, that's the world we've been in. But I wanted to know from your point of view, why is it cool to be a leader, and what was your thinking about going into leadership, and how has it been in the world of leadership, Emily?
Yeah, absolutely. So this one, is close to home because I spent a lot of my early career being encouraged, let's say, to go down the AE route. It's in the industry, it's really talked about. You know, at every event you go to, is how can I become an AE? So there's maybe even a little bit of propaganda around it, to be honest. but it wasn't, you know, it's not for me. I have done closing early on in my career, and I wouldn't say I was bad at it. I was pretty good at it, but I'm not really a lone wolf. So for me, I've grown up seeing my mum in a leadership position and really being like heavily exposed to that. She used to take me in to work with her if it was school holidays. And so I kind of saw that firsthand. And I used to say to people, you know, I want to be a manager. I want to be like my mum. I want to be a manager. But yeah, I think it's, let's go back to why it's cool. You have a direct relationship with people who you can actually help them change their careers and change their lives and kind of go in the direction that they want, and helping and watching people grow and develop. For me, it just brings me, it kind of fuels me, it makes me feel really energetic. So that is really cool for me. Specifically, and I think that still, although it is getting better, it's still probably an underappreciated section of the business. Most people will now agree that in SaaS, SDR is the most difficult role, the hardest role, the toughest role. Some people will be like, the worst role. Not necessarily agreeing with that.
Yeah.
But I think people say that, but that doesn't necessarily also come with the other side, which is the appreciation, the recognition. I think still in a lot of companies, it's treated like the little brother or the little sister of the team that is like, the only reason you'd be in that role is because you need to step up into the next role, which shouldn't be the case, because it is a highly skilled role that once you get to the top of your game, there's no actual reason why you couldn't stay in it and be a very successful SDR, which I think is starting to happen in America.
Yeah.
Lifers.
Yeah.
Very cool. I love the idea of that kind of happening more and more over here.
Yeah.
So I think maybe just like my shout out to people is like, if you're not 100% sure about the AE role, don't be afraid to say that, because I know for a long time I told everybody, when I become an AE, when I become an AE, meanwhile in my mind going, I really don't want to be an AE. So actually maybe, you know, have that confidence, know that the leadership are, you know, wising up to the idea that it's not the only route. I've moved people into sales, marketing, operations, sales enablement.
Love it.
SDR leadership, had a couple of people move up to SDR leadership, and that was my favorite one out of all of the progression paths I've done. When I stepped up, I'm going to shout her out because she's absolutely wonderful, Grace Corby, who works for Hakoda. She is amazing. When I stepped her up into a team lead role and into a manager role, she's now head of SDR. She is performing so well. But it felt like I think it was maybe some kind of like therapeutic for me. So it felt like I was able to help my earlier career self. I had some great mentors, but I've never had anybody in a direct line management role above me who's ever, you know, who was purely SDR leadership focused. I've always had like a sales director or a CRO or somebody who's got a lot more remit. Whereas I really felt like I was trying to be the person I needed when I was setting up. So that was a really good experience. But music to my ears if somebody wants to go into leadership, because I personally really enjoy that progression path. So you might find that your leader feels the same way, and you're saying you want to be an AE because you want to please them, but you might really want to be a leader, and that might please them even more.
Yeah. I love it. And so many points that I agree with there. So, you know, one of the bits of advice that I give to those, you know, new SDRs of if you want to go into leadership is, if you really want to earn a shit ton of cash, an account executive role is a really great role to go in. And, you know, alluding to that lone wolf bit, and I said, if that's what motivates you, then cool, go for it. But with myself, I found that money doesn't motivate me. Money was just a byproduct of what I was doing and the success of that. But I really found energy and passion, seeing other people win, and helping them succeed. And to your point, like this industry, these roles can literally change your life.
Yeah.
You know? And when you see other people coming into their own and maturing and, you know, becoming successful and happy, it brings some joy inside as well, right? And yeah. to your point as well, where, you know, you're able to impart the young, like help that younger version of yourself, because you can see yourself in a lot of people. And I found this countless times over the years where I'm like, you really remind me of me when I was at that point or at that age.
Yeah.
And I just wish I had somebody to give that love and support and coaching to really help them become like the best version of themselves, right?
Yeah.
And you know, also like trying to find those mentors. I think that's a question I get hit a lot with, Emily, is like people will approach me and said, could you be my coach? Can you be your mentor? And I'm like, cool, happy to be that. But what is it that you're looking for as a coach and a mentor?
Yeah.
And at some points be like, I don't know. Yeah. Like, I just see you doing the thing that I want to do one day. So I think if I just, you know, speak to you enough, it will hopefully rub off. But I'd love to ask you, when somebody's looking for a mentor or a coach or anything, what attributes should they be looking for, or what should they be thinking to themselves as to why do they want a mentor? What advice should you give?
It's a hard question, because I think it really ultimately depends on what they are trying to get out of the mentoring and the coaching. So and actually, you know, if you've never had mentoring and coaching before, you might not know what that is. But I think some reflection and some introspection might be important first to think, okay, is this a skills based requirement, or is it a confidence thing, or is it a mindset thing? Because you're going to find different people depending on you know which of the areas it is that you want. Or so I do some mentoring for at the moment for women who are just stepping up into their first time from an SDR into leadership or team lead role. And I am specifically, when people reach out and say they want some mentoring, I'm specifically only going to coach if you are in that transition between stepping up into the leadership position, because I've decided that's what I can provide the best quality for right now. It fuels me as well. So I think knowing what you're looking for is the most important. And if you also don't know what you're looking for, then you can always Google it. You can always speak to people who've had a mentor before and say, like, why did you get your mentor? What did they do for you? Why should I get a mentor? Get some ideas and then decide what resonates with you in those conversations.
Yeah.
That's probably the only advice I can give, is it's in them somewhere.
Yeah. Exactly, 100%. And sometimes, you know, it could take a while before they figure out what that is, what they're looking for specifically. And I think it's the other bit is, like, I had somebody approach me the other day on LinkedIn saying, Neil, I want some coaching. I want you to be kind of my coach and my mentor. And I just said, you know, happy to be there, but what's the driving force behind this? And they said, well, you know, I've just started this new role and this company, they don't know how to do outbound. Like, they've never really done it before. It's been an inbound business historically. And I said, okay, cool. And I said back to them, I said, but you know what outbound is. So what do you need from me? And he said, well, you know, I just feel a bit worried going into this solo and being that first person to help them with it. And I said, well, here's the thing, like, you could, you know, subscribe. We could do the coaching. But I kind of honestly said to him, I pushed him back. And I said, I genuinely believe you know what you're doing. And I think if it's early days, getting a coach right at the beginning, I don't feel it's the right time. I think what you best need doing is go for the role. Again, if they don't know how to outbound and you do, then you're one step ahead of them already as it is.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So go into it with the knowledge, but go in with an open mind of, okay, just see what they're doing, and then just give them some quick wins. Come up with some formulas, come up with some strategies, and run for about 3 or 6 months, dude. Because if you then come back to me at that point, you'll actually have something to work on together with. Otherwise, you're just going to be paying me for just listening to what you're going to say, which, again, isn't a problem. Happy to take your money, bro. But I just don't feel it's the right time. So I think sometimes you have to go through the experiences first to then really understand what is it specifically that you want help on and to work on. But another question I'd love to ask is, as you've mentioned, you know, you're helping those people that are about to step up or making that transition. So could I ask, Emily, imagine I was that rep and I'm now contemplating stepping up into leadership.
Yeah.
What advice would you give to me as I'm stepping up to help me prepare for that step up?
Yeah, so I think what I normally focus on with ladies that I'm working with is getting more of a real understanding of what it takes to be a leader. Because I think when you're not in a leadership position, it looks like something that is different to what it is. So really, we go into pulling back the curtain, I guess, and making sure that there's some mental preparedness for what it's actually like. I think if somebody's trying to decide, the best area is like, look at your skill set, look at what gives you energy in the day. Is it the things you're doing alone, or is it the things you're doing with people or for people? That's probably gonna give you the biggest indicator on what is the best option. We joke about how SDR is the hardest role, but like, I do also think that if you're the person leading the people doing the hardest role, that's also pretty hard. And there's some ugly areas of leadership and some parts that are really, really difficult. You know, if you've got a poor performer who you need to let go from the business, that it doesn't matter what they've done or you know, what the situation is, that is always extremely difficult and emotional, no matter how many times you've done it. Because they are a human at the end of the day. You're having an impact on their livelihood. So I think the most you can do is try and mentally prepare somebody for what shifts in the way that they have to think about the way they're working is going to come from that
definitely. And as you know, like, getting them mentally prepared and the shifts that they're going to go through, like managing people and, you know, hiring and firing is part of leadership, and it's not easy, and I've done it lots of times, and it's not nice, and it is mentally draining as well. Because I think this can kind of like meander into our discussion about parenthood, working in tech and working in leadership as well. So I think before having my boy, I was happy as Larry, living life, risks, and I could do whatever the hell I want.
Yeah.
But I think when I became a father, and it was when I was in my first tech job, shortly after, my mindset and perspective on life completely changed. And I became more of a parent to my SDR team. Encapsulated this father sort of figure. And I knew that I was not their dad, but I cared for them more, and I was more, you know, worried about the choices that they were making, and if things weren't going great at work, or if there was a beef between two reps over the territory, and that this is my lead, you know, trying to mediate that.
Yeah.
And I think one day, the funniest thing that made me laugh once was, I was working at a company called Intro, and I was in Oxford Street, and I don't know if Claire's listening to this, but one day Claire, who was one of my reps, she was learning how to do cold calling, and we're at the desk, and she's sitting next to this guy called Luke. And then she turned around to me, instead of saying Neil, she said Dad.
Oh.
And she was like, she grabbed her face, oh my God, I cannot believe I said that. But part of me was just like, I feel a little bit proud of that. But what is it like? Because I had a guest last week, Sean, where she discussed, you know, being a mother to her children, and obviously being a manager role, it's hard.
Yeah.
Because you're having to balance parent life and bringing up your children, and working in a very, to an extent, very stressful job and a very demanding job.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, there are some people that are perhaps going to be going into parenthood. What has your experience been like going into motherhood and also working for a tech company, Emily?
It's interesting because mine's been almost the opposite of what you've said. I think that I would felt more like mothering my team before I was a mom. And actually, I, not in the way that you've had, which is, the old slip up that you do at school. I've had a couple of teams where they have jokingly called me mom. Like when I fix something, they've gone, thanks, mom, like as a joke. But I feel that it's almost gone the other way for me. They were my sole focus. And now when I look at my current team, I'm not saying they're not my sole focus. I'm saying that because they're not, because I do have a baby now, and that is a whole life shift.
Yeah.
But I actually look at them and think, you know what? I'm dealing with somebody who's learning how to walk. You're grown up. You can do this on your own. And maybe I kind of like have lengthened the reins a little bit more and sort of see them more mature than I did, because previously, you know, I didn't have any context of what somebody who truly can't do anything for themselves is like. So that's been a shift for me. But I think I'm so glad that, the working life has shifted to more hybrid. I work from home for part of the week, and those days I get to take Maya to nursery and pick her up from nursery. And that's really healthy.
Yeah.
I don't know what my life would have looked like with, you know, with a different, with a 5 day in the week in the office situation. My other half is a solutions engineer, so also in the same kind of space, and works really, really hard. So both of us are in pretty high stress environment jobs.
Yeah.
But it's kind of got to be about like juggling as much as possible. Like I don't work on Fridays at the moment. I'm using my annual leave and we're recording this on a Friday.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, you've got to, and he's upstairs making sure that if the baby wakes up,
yeah,
which it's already 9:02 and she's not woken up because she's a great sleeper. So, but yeah, I think like when you suddenly have something else in your life that's really important, it puts a lot more pressure. It puts more pressure away from work because in one sense, it's like, I've got to be successful at work because I'm now building a life for a little human. But then at the same time, I'm like, is that thing that used to feel like life or death really that important when I've now got this gorgeous little baby upstairs? Like, so there is, it kind of checks you like in and out in that way from my perspective. But yeah, she sat at my desk with me the other day after I got her from nursery. I still had some work to do. And I had her sat on my lap, and I've got a kind of a, you know, wireless keyboard here. I just turned it off and let her type with me, and I got loads of work done. Where I was like, actually, you know what, you can juggle it more than you think, I guess. Yeah,
and I love that. That's such a cool perspective as well, because I think, you know, like with the hybrid working. So back when I became a dad, so like 9 years ago, it wasn't a main thing, and I could just remember. When Blake was born, I'm a proud dad. I love my kid to pieces. And I just couldn't wait for the day to end so I could just go back home and like play with him, bath and everything like that. But it always also used to give me a thing of, you know, when I woke up in the morning, that motivation of, okay, I'm now a parent. I do need to provide. I've got another mouth to feed.
Yeah.
And, you know, to that point of, you know, you need to be successful. And it does come with the stresses and pressures.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes, you know, like in the episode that I recorded with Sian, sometimes she said that sometimes a team don't understand the pressures of being a parent and the things that you have to do, that you can't always go out for Friday on drinks with the team or catch up and do stuff like that. But, you know, I think equally what I learned was, you know, it's the first 8 months, you have no consistency and their times are all over with sleeps, naps, feeds and all of that stuff. And you go a little bit la-la, but to the point where I was like, work was a bit of a respite because it was like I got away from the house to do those things.
I didn't have that luxury. I was 100% in it for the first 10 months. Yeah, and then I came back. And I'll agree with you. When I came back, I was like, oh, my goodness, it's quiet. I can sit on the train and listen to a podcast and I can actually, like, be me again, which that was nice. But, yeah, I think that you know, if you've got a great partner with you alongside for that, then that can help a lot, because like me and my partner used to work together a few years ago and we now share an office at home and like we don't have to, the space by the way in the house that we could not, but we like to, like, I mean, that kind of, oh, people probably be sick of us, but yeah, so we share an office and we can't both go into London on the same day as each other because somebody does have to come and collect, pick up the kid, and we do live quite far out of London, so the travel time is quite long. But what's interesting now is, like, I'm not just juggling me and motherhood, I'm also juggling me, motherhood, and his career as well, because we have to decide who needs to go into the office more that day. So it's like, we'll almost have like a little debate, like, I think I'm going to go in next Thursday, and then I'll say, well, I'm doing a training session for you know, the whole SDR team, and then he'll say, well, I'm doing a presentation to X external customer, and then I'm like, well, you win, off you go. So then I have to think to my team, I've got to move this session because I can't come in now. And that part is like, I, you know, it's hard to sort of have that on top when then you've got to explain to someone, well, actually, it's nothing to do with the child because she is in nursery, but now it's actually that my partner, but we can't both be 2 hours away from nursery all day. So yeah, it's a whole, I don't think people think that they're also going to be having to consider their partner's career and what what they need as well. Yeah.
It, You're right, because like with my son's mother, not with her anymore, but I remember in the early days when we had Blake, they had their own business, they had their own work, and I had a daytime job and their work was evening related. And I remember we had to kind of build up a calendar within our kitchen to talk about shifts. Yeah. You know, who's going to collect the boy from nursery, who's going to do the bath, who's going to do dinner, and then what's going to happen on this day and everything like that. And, you know, I had two calendars at that point, which was family calendar, and then I had work calendar as well. And I remember sometimes I would have to decline certain meeting work invites because I had commitments on family. Yeah. And also, you know, I've got a lot of friends that work within sales that are single parents as well. And sometimes they have to be able to work from home in order to drop to nursery and then collect. And then my poor friend Charlotte, her daughter had fallen asleep at nursery for 3 hours. So when we was going to catch up, she said she's not going to bed tonight. And she said that will then impact work the next day. So meaning that she will have to work from home because she'll just be completely exhausted. So I think, you know, the understanding of, you know, dynamics do change and times just change, like when you have kids as well. And not everybody here will know that or aware of that, you know, because that is your choice. And that's the things that we're doing as parents, right? But it is something to bear in mind that when you go into the life. But I think equally, you know, the fears that I used to have working in sales was when I became a parent, I thought, do all my dreams stop in terms of my career? Do I have to park anything? Because I was that manager who wanted to become an AE. And when, you know, I had my son, I was like, does that stop? Because I don't know if I can travel to go meet clients now. I don't know if I can do the demos. I don't know if I can spend hours up creating a proposal and all of that sort of stuff. The good news was I just had to have a little bit of a break for him to be a bit older before I took that transition.
Yeah.
And it can happen. So I think what I'm trying to say is it doesn't put a pause in anything. It's just, it just changes maybe a few timelines or not.
Yeah.
But
when you're in the trenches of the early years.
Yeah.
Then yeah, maybe, because my other half got a new job. Literally, like, Maya must have been 6-7 weeks old, which was good because it meant that he had the first 6 weeks off with us, which was amazing. Better than kind of the 2 week standard is rubbish, isn't it? But but then he started a new role, and starting a new role is one of the most tiring and kind of mentally draining things that you can imagine. Plus, we've also got a newborn in the house. That I think that was quite rough. But best decision in the long run, because it's great for his career and it's been really good for us. But there were definitely moments where shift work was happening and he used to kind of stay up and work until about like 2-3 in the morning, but just with her like strapped to his chest, sleeping on him. And then I would wake up and do the morning shift, and he would kind of have a lie in. And luckily, like, now you can kind of flex time what you're able to do and kind of get your meetings done in the middle of the day, but then maybe finish early, do bath and bedtime, and then get back to it, which doesn't feel as work-life balance-y, but it is in a way, because you're taking like a 3-hour break in the early or the late afternoon to kind of be with it, and then you'll go back to it. So need to, again, back to the point of interviewing the company you're going to, that's a step that's happening in your life or that might happen in your life soon. You also need to identify that you're going somewhere that is going to be flexible, that's going to understand and empathize with, you know, juggling that family life.
100% agree. And I love that. Great tips for the parents out there and those that are expecting as well and coming onto it. And kind of segueing into like a different topic from this, because obviously building your personal brand. And I think I want to kind of get this in two-prong approach, where I've seen that you've done some stuff with sales confidence, really love them. I'm actually interviewing James after this episode today, funny enough. But I just wanted to know, like, how did you get involved with sales confidence, and how are you as a leader looking to kind of build your personal brand, Emily?
Yeah. So this actually started when I came back from maternity leave, and I felt probably the most imposter syndrome that I've felt in my career. Like, it's weird to be out of the working world in newborn mum world, not working in the daytime. All the people that you meet or book with are just people who also have babies. All you talk about is babies, and if you're not talking to other mums about babies, you're talking to a baby who doesn't talk back to you. So like, 10 months of not talking about anything to do with work or your industry and getting nothing back and kind of feeling like you're losing your brain a bit. And there's a lot of hormonal things that play as well, make memory bad. So I came back and I felt a little bit like, I don't know if I'm the same person anymore. I don't remember, you know, all of the things I feel like I could do. I don't know what, you know, there was loads of imposter syndrome and also a load of change in the industry, you know. Like when I went on maternity leave, ChatGPT didn't exist.
What the hell is this, AI?
Yeah, it was like, it was a big shift. And then I decided that the only way I was going to force myself to get back into the right mindset and having the right kind of interactions and conversations was to put myself out there. And then I messaged James and said, like, let's do the talk.
Yeah.
At the event, and then I've been on a Q&A since, and then I've messaged you.
Yeah.
So it's been pretty much from my perspective, like, I've got to outbound, make myself, put myself out there, because if I don't, then, you know, I'll stay in this kind of imposter syndrome feeling, and I'm out of it now, which is really good, because it was actually quite short term. Came back in, did all the good stuff with the team, got loads of positive feedback really quickly, and was like, "Oh yeah, I remember. I'm actually okay at this."
Yeah.
So yeah, but that was the reason why I really put myself, and I had never done public speaking before, so I was like, "Right, let's go for it. Let's get up on the stage." And it was, I loved it. Yeah.
I love that. I love that. That is a cool story, and you're right. Sometimes when you take a step back because you're doing stuff with your life, you have to kind of get your bearings back when you're coming back into it. And I can understand that imposter syndrome of, can I do this thing? Because, you know, for me, historically, I've always been for the last 6-7 years, a sales trainer or a sales coach. But when I've gone back into a leadership position where people have hired me as a manager, there is that thing of, can I do this stuff still? I don't know if I can, I'm just happy to train people. Then we end the Zoom and then they give me their feedback. But now I'm going to actually have to work with these people day to day and help and build them. And, you know, I'll be honest, I won't ever go. I don't think, I'm not going to say never, but I don't favor going back into leadership positions and having to manage a team and be responsible for them. I prefer the coaching side of it as well.
Yeah.
But, you know, personal branding and people doing guest spots and speaking and doing stuff like this. Because I remember back in 2021, I started seeing a big shift within the tech sales industry where I kind of said it on LinkedIn one day. I said 2021 is going to be the year of the SDR, that people are going to start recognizing the sales development role and how freaking hard it is and how amazing these people are. And seeing SDRs or SDR managers and leaders creating their own podcasts or start doing guest spots or being part of webinars or leadership discussions. I remember back in the day going on to SDRs Anonymous and stuff like that. And seeing more and more and more. And then with sales confidence, historically, I just used to see them as leadership positions. But now they're doing SDR events where the SDRs are speaking. And I sit back and said, I called it. I knew it was going to happen. Because I reflect back in my days of being an SDR manager for the first time. On my LinkedIn back then, it was mainly company founders that were doing the posts and doing the discussions. Mm-hmm. It wasn't the employees within the business. And, you know, more and more people, we are digital personalities on the likes of LinkedIn, TikTok, Instagram, you name it, we're on it, right? Yeah. But it makes me really proud and happy to see people now valuing themselves, recognizing and coming into their own and pushing themselves out of their comfort zones. Because I think me personally, I love going on a stage and I love microphone because I've done music, right?
Yeah.
But I was fearful to do it in the world of sales. And later this year in April, I'm going to an event in Germany where it's going to be in front of 2,000-3,000 people. My heart is pumping, Emily. I am shitting my pants, right? But I know that if I do it and experience, I know it's going to be really cool. And I know things are going to be fine. But I think it's that little bit of being scared a little bit is a good and healthy thing.
It's a good thing.
Yeah, because it makes you feel alive.
Yeah. And also it just shows that you care.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah absolutely.
100%. Well, Emily, it's been, you know, absolutely amazing having you on our show today and on this chapter with us. And, you know, the question that I love to ask all of my guests, if you could go back to that Emily of all those years ago, maybe pre-assessment day, and they're about to embark on the same journey as you've gone through, what three bits of advice would you like to give to that Emily Parker?
Yes. So I think my first bit of advice, and something we did speak about earlier, is about like trusting your gut in terms of what you think is the right path for you and not feeling like you have to mold yourself to other people. So that's my first one. My second one would be to speak to as many people as you possibly can. And there wasn't really as much networking when I was at first in SDR, probably just because of like what you just said, it's hard to access those people, but there's loads now. So, you know, listen to all the podcasts that you can, speak to the people, go to the events, kind of immerse yourself into the industry. And then my third one, because it's always one that I say, is literally listen to every single call that you make. And that sounds time consuming, and it is time consuming, but it's going to make a huge difference to, you know, the way that you control those conversations, the way that you kind of make improvements in a speedy way. Listen back to your calls, treat it as like a little playlist on your way home or on your way in the next morning, and get used to hearing the sound of your own voice, which is never easy, but I think so. They're my top three, and also I'm just going to give you a fourth one. Sorry,
bring us a bonus.
But we've just said it, but I just want to remind everyone, interview the company that you're going for. Really qualify whether they're right for you.
I love that. Great advice, Emily, and I love it. Getting used to, like, doing a podcast, get used to listening to your own voice, because it is good for self-reflection, right? And you know, we are our own biggest critic, and we can notice when we can improve in things. I love that. I absolutely do. And are there any shout outs or kudos that you want to give on today's show, Emily?
Oh, that's so nice. I didn't think you were gonna do that. Well, I already gave a shout out, didn't I, to Grace. She's brilliant. So I'd say the same. She's actually just had her second, so congrats to her. That'll be so exciting. Also, you know, big shout out to James Ski. I think he's doing really good stuff in the industry. I think that when Sales Confidence started, you know, I don't know if he or anyone thought it was going to become this valuable for people in the industry. I think it's really cool. The events are great. And I'm a member actually also of a group of SDR leaders, sales development leaders it's called, and there's like 300 plus SDR leaders in a Slack channel. We go for meetups, there's events, that's also really cool. So anyone who is sort of able to help you get a network is going to be super valuable to you.
100%. And a big shout out to the SDL leaders. I'm part of that Slack group as well. So perhaps I'll see you at the next event, Emily.
Yes, cool.
100%. So again, just a general reminder for our listeners, watchers, and subscribers. Firstly, thank you for joining us on Emily's chapter today. If you've been listening to this in Spotify or Apple Podcasts, please make sure that you give us a rating and share this episode with your network. If you're watching this on our YouTube channel, make sure that you like, comment, subscribe down below, and leave a comment or question for Emily. But also, Emily's LinkedIn profile will be within the show notes. So if you want to connect, pick her brain on any topics, or FYI, she is hiring. And if you'd love her to be your manager, then go for it, dudes. So thank you so much, Emily. Would love to see you back on the show in the future, but wishing you a successful week, and most importantly, happy selling. Thank you for listening to the SDR Disco Call podcast today. We would like to get this message out to more and more sales development reps, so please like, comment, and share in your local podcast provider. If you don't want to miss a show, you can always send a blank email to sdrdiscocall@bcast, which is bcast.email, and you'll be added to our mailing list. We're also on the lookout for new guests, so if you work in the world of sales development as an SDR, BDR, MDR, or ADR, and feel that you have an important message or story to share, feel free to email us at podcast@happyselling.io, and we'd love to have you on board.